National Security This Week, a weekly look at American national security issues. And now, your host, John Olson.
Good morning, everyone. It's Wednesday, and you've joined us for National Security This Week. We get together here every Wednesday at 9 a.m. to discuss national security, and we're joined by guests from our local area, from around Minnesota, and from across the nation to help us explore American national security. Our longtime listeners know that I've promised to do a number of shows this year on the U.S. Space Force, the newest military service. We've had a couple of shows earlier in the year focused mostly on space policy, a little bit about space systems, and the importance of space for American national security interests. Today, however, we're going to take a deep dive into military space systems. And our guest is Colonel Joseph Roth, U.S. Space Force from Space Systems Command. Colonel Joseph Roth serves as Director, Innovation and Prototyping of the Acquisition Delta. He's also Commander, Space Systems Command, Detachment 1 at Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico. Colonel Roth leads a combined team of over 650 military, government civilians, and contractors at four geographically separated units to rapidly transition and deliver war-winning space concepts, technologies, and capabilities to the United States Space Force and mission partners across the national security space community. The Acquisition Delta under Colonel Roth conducts tests and experimentation, prototyping, demonstrations, and operations of innovative space systems and technology for the Space Systems Command. The Acquisition Delta also executes the Space Test Program on behalf of the Department of Defense to provide space flight opportunities for the entire DoD space science and technology community. Colonel Roth has served in a variety of operations, acquisition, staff, and command assignments at many levels across the Air Force and the Department of Defense. Prior to his current assignment, Colonel Roth was the Chief of Space Electro-Optics Division in the Directed Energy Directorate, I might have to ask about that, at Air Force Research Laboratory at Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico. Colonel Roth is a 1997 graduate of the University of Cincinnati, and he earned his commission through Air Force ROTC. Colonel Joseph Roth, welcome to National Security This Week.
Hey, good morning, John. Thanks for having me on the show. Really excited to be here and talk about this awesome new organization that we stood up called the Space Force.
And I understand you are on travel right now in Seattle. Can you talk about what you're doing, or is it super secret?
not secret at all. Actually, just the opposite. So here in Seattle, we were just down in the Bay Area, so San Francisco, Silicon Valley, up by Livermore. And we are trying to meet with one of the things that makes our military great is our industrial partners. So working with companies out in the industry. So I'm here in Seattle. This is also one of the hubs of innovation and space systems and aerospace. And we're here to work with smaller, non-traditional companies. And we have an initiative I think we'll talk about a little bit later on called the Space Systems Command Front Door.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely want to ask about all the partners, the commercial partners. So, Colonel Roth, I've been sitting here looking over your official biography, and I have to say I am very impressed. Education was clearly a core component of your entire career in the U.S. Air Force, and now you've transitioned over to the Space Force. You've held a number of significant positions in the space or space-related fields, as well as key positions in policy and strategy for national security-related issues throughout your career. Were all of these assignments that you've had and your education, were they components of your own career planning, or did the U.S. Air Force kind of guide you toward these career opportunities and these education assignments leading up to this transition you made into the Space Force?
Well, John, I don't think most people try and plan their careers, but typically you get opportunities thrown at you that you cannot turn down. And my career would not be your traditional Air Force officer career path. So I've been all over, served in the Pentagon, served a year in Afghanistan, been supporting from policy, working with the White House and Office of Secretary of Defense, from working in the missile fields in Wyoming. And I don't think you could have written a story or a career plan that hit all the cool things that I got to do so far in the air and now the Space Force. One of the most impressive things throughout that career was being a recruiting squadron commander down in Florida. So what we were doing there was just an amazing to see. My enlisted airmen were changing lives and giving people opportunity in the Air Force, and really helps reblue you, connects you with the public, and really helps understand why we're doing this, is to protect this great nation. So can you plan a career? You obviously can try to, but you'll get so many cool opportunities along the way that by the end of your career, you will not have recognized it, but it helps you develop and grow as a leader.
I know exactly what you're talking about when you talk about kind of non-traditional career paths. That certainly described my my time in the Navy. I do want to very quickly ask this directed energy directorate you were in. What can you tell us about that assignment, the last assignment you had before you took over this one in the acquisition delta at Space Force? Anything you want to talk about for directed energy? I know that's sort of a big R&D effort in DOD.
Yeah, and it's actually been an R&D effort for quite a few decades, is trying to turn directed energy, which is lasers or high-powered microwaves, and turn those into systems that protect our troops in the field. I know the big initiative right now is to have systems that could shoot down aerial drones and other systems that may try to swarm our bases overseas. And so we have research going on in the Air Force Research Lab to help us develop those technologies. So many of those technologies are really actually starting to come together and really making progress in areas where we can actually field those systems. The one area that I worked in was the space division within directed energy. And what we do is we use lasers to calculate the turbulence in the air, so we can use our large observatories for satellite to look at satellites on the ground in a mission area called space domain awareness. So we take any of the turbulence in the air, correct for it, and then we can get really nice, exquisite images of satellites that are orbiting the Earth. And it's a pretty powerful capability, developed in secret within Air Force Research Lab through the 80s and early 90s, and then was a technology we delivered. We made it public so that the astronomy could use it. And now telescopes, very large telescopes all across the world, are taking advantage of this adaptive optics technology developed in your Air Force Research Lab to find other planets, to find asteroids or potential objects or meteors that may crash into the Earth. So very interesting. So I think that's a key part of what we do, is many of our systems have dual applications and can support academia or industry or other avenues. And really good to see that we have a success story there.
All right. If we could, Colonel Roth, I'd like to discuss the creation of U.S. Space Force a few years ago and how leaders like you made that transition to serving in the Space Force. Can you explain to us how that transition happened? How did a career U.S. Air Force officer make the official transition to becoming an officer in the U.S. Space Force?
Well, and John, having served in the Air Force for 24 years and now just 1 year in the Space Force, you could have not predicted this. It was kind of you knew it was going to happen at some point in the future as we pushed out and gained more capabilities in space, but I didn't realize it would happen within my time or my career. But the reason we have the Space Force, and it stood up in December 20th 2019, we started it. It was the first major it's the first service created since 1947, when we created the Air Force, and really important that we stood it up. And the whole reason we have the Space Force is not because it was a good organizational idea or it was a good political idea. It's because of the threat. So the reason we have a Space Force is that emerging threat. And, you know, I think we'll talk a little bit later on about that threat. But the reason we have it and it has strong bipartisan support to stand up the Space Force was because of the actions of a few potential adversaries that are growing by leaps and bounds and definitely trying to take advantage or take away our advantage militarily and economically that space provides. But for me personally, the Space Force was commissioned in the Space Force. So I actually had to resign my commission after 24 years of service in the Air Force and accept a new commission in the Space Force. So all of our guardians have done that process, whether they were Air Force, whether they're soldiers or sailors who elected to come over and transfer to the Space Force. We all retook the oath. And we are now serving in the Space Force. So really exciting time. And it's not every day you get to build a brand new service, a digital service from scratch and really try and do things differently.
It's a good thing they didn't do a bait and switch on you, get you to sign out of being an officer in the Air Force and then not let you sign back up to take the oath for the Space Force. Colonel, we've heard in the news that personnel from other branches, and you just talked about that, have also transitioned to become guardians in the Space Force. And we've also just recently, as I understand it, had the first graduates from Space Force boot camp complete their training. Could you tell us how the personnel transitions are coming? I mean, you're growing as a service. How does all that work? How does somebody, you know, join the Space Force, go through Air Force or Space Force boot camp? And what is the sort of the target number you think Space Force needs to get to before it's fully manned?
Yeah, so we're really exciting times. Back in June, we graduated our first class of dedicated basic military training boot camp down at Lackland Air Force Base. And it was our first Space Force boot camp where we graduated 71 recent graduates. And they will join the other 800 guardians that know nothing else but the Space Force. If you're interested in learning a little bit about the opportunities and career areas that the Space Force provides, go out to spaceforce.com, really simple, spaceforce.com, and you can see some of the amazing opportunities. But all the services, what's really cool about our mission, it's really a joint mission, and we support all different services, so the Army, the Navy, the U.S. Marine Corps, the Coast Guard, and we also support civil applications. So a soldier or a sailor that may have experience or background that the Space Force needs can apply, and they do this on a yearly basis. They can apply for a transfer and come into the Space Force. We've also restructured and moved some of the units that fell under the Army and the Navy, and they are just starting now to arrive under U.S. Space Command and the Space Force to augment our forces there. So our force structure is changing a little bit. But we are a really small service right now. So we have about 7,500 guardians. And with our Space Force civilians, we grow to about 16,000 guardians total. The next closest service is the United States Marine Corps at about 182,000. So we're the smallest force. But we also have some of the greatest capabilities and the best technology to support and defend the nation. So really cool opportunities here, and really you have opportunities to transfer, but right now I'd say it is really competitive. And so there are a lot of people that would love to join the Space Force, and if you have the grades and the skills and the determination and drive, you can do that. The Space Force has a new, we had the Air Force core values, but we have the Space Force. It's called the Guardian Idea, where we have four items that we focus on our core values. And we look for people with these values. So we have courage, commitment, character, and connection. So courage, commitment, character, and connection. And those are those ideals of the people we're trying to bring into the Space Force.
What kind of skill sets are you looking at to try and bring people onto the space? I mean, rocket science obviously would be a good one, but what other specific skills do you need to bring people into the Space Force?
Well, we look all across the board. So we have positions in your traditional STEM career areas, so engineering, science, mathematics, those high-tech areas for our acquisition core. We also have Intel. We have communications, radio operators. We have cybersecurity specialists. So we wanted to concentrate. I know General Raymond, when we stood up the Space Force, was focusing on those core capabilities that are from our personnel that directly contribute to that mission. All of your base support functions are still remain Air Force.
Okay.
So your medical, your supplies, security forces, et cetera. We still, like the Marine Corps does, leverage a lot of the, like the Marine Corps leverages Navy support structures. The Space Force leverages the Air Force support structures.
That makes good sense. For our audience, this is National Security This Week, and I'm your host, John Olson. Our guest today is Colonel Joseph Roth of the U.S. Space Force, and we're discussing U.S. Space Force's Space Systems Command. So, Colonel Joseph Roth, we covered some of the basics. We understand how personnel are becoming part of the Space Force, becoming guardians. If we could, let's talk about how the Space Force is organized. I think because it's the newest service, most people have no idea how the Space Force is organized to do the missions needed to protect American national security. Can you paint us a picture of the Space Force? Where's it headquartered? What are the main units that fall under that headquarters? I think our listeners would kind of like to understand from a line and block chart perspective sort of what Space Force looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. The Space Force is just like the other services, is our chief of space operations. Right now it's General Raymond is our leader. We still fall under the Department of the Air Force. So the Secretary of the Air Force is still our secretary. But General Raymond is part of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is a full-fledged member sitting there with the other services. That is headquartered in the Pentagon, just like all the other services in the Department of Defense. The Space Force is structured in a way where we have three field commands. These are like the major commands within the Air Force. So we have Space Operations Command, also known as SPOC. We have Space Training and Readiness Command, also known as STARCOM. And then my organization, we have Space Systems Command. So think the acquisition command that builds, develops, acquires, and sustains capabilities in the field. That's done by Space Systems Command. Right now, Space Operations Command is headquartered out in Colorado Springs, Colorado. We also have STARCOM, which is just starting up. It's going through a basing action, but it's temporarily based out of Colorado Springs, Colorado as well. We have Space Systems Command, which is headquartered out at LA Air Force Base. I know they're going through the renaming process, and that will likely become a Space Force base here in the near future. But that's in Los Angeles, California. We also have a presence. If you go down, those are our major field commands.
Okay.
But if you go down levels lower, we're spread out all across the world. So I know my organization, the Innovation and Prototyping Delta, we're headquartered at Kirtland Air Force Base, New Mexico. But I have folks in Los Angeles working on developing next generation satellite capabilities. We have folks in New Mexico. We have folks in Houston embedded with NASA. So we have a detachment down there helping get experiments on the International Space Station. And then we have we're supporting a lot of organizations in the Colorado area. So by and large, the Space Force is spread out in a lot of different locations from California to Florida. We have launch bases, and we're structured in a very similar way to the way the Air Force is. We have field commands instead of major commands, and our wiring diagram shows, we've got a leaner and more agile system that we, since we're designing a service from scratch, leaner, more agile system that'll be flexible. One important thing, John, for your listeners to note is the how we fall under the supporting the joint warfighter. So all of our capabilities are fielded just like any of the other services. We have the organized, train, and equip mission, but they support a combatant command. So whether that's a regional combatant commander, such as Indo-PACOM or European Command, most of our forces support United States Space Command, which is also headquartered in Colorado Springs, Colorado right now. And they are working on plans, you know, Congress and the administration and the department are trying to work out the details. It's supposed to move to Huntsville, Alabama, but it's going through the processes for that warfighting component of our joint force.
So Space Command is sort of the equivalent of one of the theater combatant commanders like Indo-PACOM, Central Command, UCOM, that kind of thing.
Actually, actually not true. So Space or U.S. Space Command,
right, right.
You got to
yes.
be careful here.
Yeah.
Yes, you're exactly right, John. They stood up U.S. Space Command, and it it's a functional combatant command, but it's exactly like all those other commands. Whereas the Space Force, we're the organize and train and equip function supporting that command.
So maybe I should make myself a little more clear. It's sort of like U.S. Cyber Command as a functional commander. U.S. Space Command is.
Yes, that's exactly right. Because it doesn't matter which area of responsibility you're
right.
in.
Global.
You know, we support all the combatant commands, geographic.
Yeah.
But all of them use space. All of them need to be protected on the cyber domain as well. So, yes, sir.
Okay, so Colonel Roth, you are assigned to Space Systems Command. What exactly is Space Systems Command? You talked a little bit about where some of the locations are, but what does the command do on sort of a day-to-day basis? Maybe you could sort of paint us another detailed picture of Space Systems Command specifically. Sounds to me like that's where the rubber meets the road with the Title 10 functions that the services have, that man, train, and equip function. Does that fall mostly on the acquisition side anyway under Space Systems Command? Because the training command is sort of trains the people to serve in Space Force. Do I have that kind of right?
Yes, absolutely. We provide a function, the acquisition and development and sustainment of space capabilities, whether they're satellites on orbit, launch vehicles or rockets, or command and control systems, battle management systems, or something as simple as your users probably use on a regular, or as your listeners use on a regular basis, GPS. Mm. So we buy and develop and build satellite systems to provide capabilities, and then we sustain those capabilities. Some of our mission areas are global positioning systems, so helping you navigate whether you use different navigation software on your phone, that is all done and supported by Space Systems Command, and then our operations teams within Space Ops Command to provide that capability free of charge, not just to the U.S., but people around the world. We also have comm systems, so we develop communication satellites and relays, ground infrastructure with antennas to communicate with satellites and beam information and data around the world. We also have a very big system for missile warning and tracking. So both ground-based radars and space assets for OPIR system. We just launched a SBIRS satellite, the last of a generation of satellites that use infrared to detect missile launches from our adversaries and protect our troops in theater. So really important capabilities. They've been the bedrock of the command. As I said earlier, it's located in Los Angeles, but Space Systems Command has 16 different locations across the country where we're supporting both our operations, our operators, and our teams downrange, our warfighters and users.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that the SBIRS, was it the GEO-6 bird that was just launched like a week ago or something like that? Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the last of a generation of exquisite capabilities that really help us. And a lot of these systems were developed back in based on lessons through the Gulf War in 1991. And remember the Scud missile launches and trying to detect where they're launching from and how to protect, you know, the civilian population and our troops in theater. And a lot of those lessons fed into the acquisition environment. And we developed capabilities to counter or at least observe and give us warning on when those happen.
Yeah, the old system that's not of operational anymore was the Defense Support Program, or the DSP satellites, which would catch that, I guess it was the heat signature of a Scud missile launching. But the time to get that information to the warfighter was really kind of slow, although the Patriot missile batteries did do an okay job back then, being able to intercept some of those incoming Scud missiles into Israel and other places. But SBIRS, space-based infrared system, was the replacement for that. As I understand it, there were six total, and the fifth and sixth ones actually replaced the first and second ones that kind of came off orbit. Is that right?
The on the exact specifications of those, I'll have to defer. That's not my area
okay.
of expertise.
No worries.
But the SBIRS constellation, we designed those satellites to last. And remember how you mentioned that it takes a while. Back in the day, it took a while during the Gulf War. We really perfected that technology, and our troops in theater and our civilian authorities' warning has really dramatically improved. And it's one of the cornerstones of our capabilities, is to provide that in-theater missile warning and protection for our troops. You can see that as an example in the past. So when there were recently with Iranian launches of ballistic missiles into some of the areas where our troops were stationed in Iraq. So it's definitely provides awesome capability. But I'll have to get back to you on the exact number of satellites we have and how they're dispositioned across the theater. You know, just know we have a full constellation of those systems up there, and they're working great.
So I'm sort of cheating because I've downloaded a whole bunch
of the fact sheet.
a whole bunch of information from the web, which I assume is pretty accurate because a lot of it comes from sort of the defense related news sources. But I have to think that you are working on what's called the Next Generation Overhead Persistent Infrared System, or Next Gen OPIR. I guess
yes. The
first launch is slated for 2025 for the first of those satellites. That'll replace SBIRS.
Yes, and it'll replace SBIRS, and we have, and we're going to a more disaggregated architecture. So we'll have satellite systems in middle Earth orbit, and as well as geosynchronous Earth orbit as well. So one of the big things that Space Systems Command is doing now is pivoting our architecture from a model where there were not. You know, since the Cold War, there were not many threats at all on orbit. And now there are a lot of threats, and our potential adversaries in China and Russia are getting bold and aggressive. And so we're developing systems now to make sure we protect and increase the resiliency of our systems, both from disaggregation, where we'll have multiple satellites instead of, exquisite, single mission satellites, will disaggregate the constellation and the architecture, spread it out. We're looking at ways to do hybrid architectures where we have commercial assets interleaved within our military assets and spread them out and definitely reduce our vulnerabilities with our systems on orbit. And that's really what Space Command was set up to do, is pivot to the threat and make sure we still have the best systems in the world on space supporting the nation. And we're doing that right now. So,
and I do want to ask you a little bit more about the threats that are up there. But before we move on, there was a General Hyten, former vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He has been very supportive of the creation of Space Force and all the things that Space Force is trying to do. But he said that you're still sort of struggling to cut through some of the bureaucracy on the acquisition side of things. And obviously space is a place where we really can't have delays because we have to have we have to hold that high ground up in space to make sure that American national security interests are protected. Are you seeing that in the time that you've been in the Space Systems Command, sort of a streamlining of the acquisition process? Is it getting better just in the time that you've been there?
Yeah, you still have the structures and the bureaucracy that was set up in place. The progress, it is, you know, a complicated environment to operate, but the reason we have it is we got to comply with the law, that's been established, implement that law into our rules and regulations and instructions. So bureaucracy was created to help facilitate, how to acquire systems. The thing that we're trying to do now, especially within the Space Force, and I know my boss, General Guetlein, who I'm traveling with this week here in Seattle, really trying to pivot it from a model where the government develops and acquires all these systems to one where we can buy before we build. We would love to partner with industry and buy systems and not have to build our own government systems unless it has a really military unique application or something that's not available in the commercial market. So there's almost like a second space renaissance going on within the venture capital community and commercial space. And we are definitely in the Space Force and Space Systems Command trying to leverage their investments and their innovation. They're doing some eye-watering innovation out there. Our industrial base with a lot of these startups and non-traditional space companies are developing capabilities. And you see, so with a lot of these mega constellations, we have SpaceX launching a lot, OneWeb on a path to do it, and Amazon. There are going to be a lot of satellites on orbit. And it's important for us to develop systems that work with them and interoperate or operate together. And we're going to have to change the way we do acquisition to go faster to keep up with that threat.
Yep. And so a couple of things we've talked about on the show in the past was the fact that there is so much up in space right now. And just extraordinary number of, you know, pieces of debris that are floating around up in space that all of these functioning satellites and manned space travel platforms need to safely get through. So we do have all that tracking capability for all the objects that are zipping around in space at 17,000 miles an hour. But it's going to become an even more crowded environment for the spacefaring nations to have platforms on orbit in space. So you guys got your work cut out for you. You mentioned threats. We've heard a lot from the Space Force leadership, just heard a few minutes from you about the threats in space from some of the other countries that are out there. Would you like to elaborate a little bit more on some of the challenges that America and our allies face in space right now?
Yeah, absolutely, John. Our adversaries are getting bold and aggressive. They want to take away our economic and our military advantages space provides. And it's been over the past couple of years, we've worked really hard to declassify a lot of information, stuff that's been at the top secret and higher levels for a long time is now unclassified and being presented to the American public and our allies and partners to make sure they're aware of the threat. So we face threats from directed energy weapons. So we talked about lasers earlier, kinetic kill weapons that are either launched from the ground or come after our satellites on orbit, electronic warfare where we're jammed or at systems that were developed by China and Russia to knock out our spacecraft electronics or our ground systems. This includes orbital and cyber attacks. And then even on the spectrum, there's a nice chart that goes through different levels that are reversible, et cetera, even protecting our systems from high altitude nuclear detonations. So new debts, which could have a significant impact on those large constellations on orbit. But let me walk through some of these. I mean, a lot of this is straight out of science fiction turned into reality. But we have Chinese satellites with robotic arms that could be used to grapple other satellites and take them out of commission. China has multiple systems, directed energy systems at varying power levels to blind or damage our satellites. And then Russia just did a recent test of a system they have to kinetically kill satellites in low Earth orbit. And it created a lot of debris. It caused our astronauts and their astronauts to go to their escape capsules on the International Space Station. So some really, really, there are important things in development that the American people should be aware of that are going on in space. And we really need to protect our systems, make them less vulnerable, and also ensure that we can deter any future conflict in space. That's really our whole goal. You talked about debris we do not want to have a war in space. It will likely not be a war just in space. It'll be in all domains, but we do not want to pollute space for generations and tens of thousands of years by having a lot of debris on orbit. And so we want to deter any potential aggression. And then if we actually have aggression, we want to swiftly stop it. So that's what the Space Force has been designed to do. And really important to protect those billions of dollars of capability that are on orbit.
So Colonel Joe Roth, I introduced you at the beginning as the director of the Acquisition Delta for Innovation and Prototyping. If you look at an organizational chart for Space Force's subordinate commands, you'll see that title over and over again, Delta. What is a Delta in the context of the U.S. Space Force? That's a term that I don't think any of us who, retired a decade ago can really sort of figure out. So can you explain it to us? What's a sort of an equivalent structure in other services in the military to a Delta?
Yeah, great question. It's kind of cool. So as we stood up the new service, we created our own way to organize. So we identified, we could no longer be airmen of the Air Force. So we created a new term called Guardians. We also created a new structure to take advantage of the capabilities of our service. And that is called a Delta. So a Delta is essentially, if you know the old Air Force structure where you have squadrons, groups, and wings, we essentially took out a layer of management. So we removed the group commanders and flattened the organizations and created kind of a hybrid organization called a Delta. So this is not quite as big as a wing, but not as small as a group. And that is the new structure we chose in the Space Force. So it'll go straight from squadrons. We still have squadrons in the Space Force. We also have branches so that are material leaders, acquirers, a squadron commander equivalent. But they go straight up to a Delta commander or Delta director. And that's the main organization of the Space Force. And we still, where the rubber meets the road is those squadrons. So just like in other services, you have brigades, battalions, you have companies. That's how the Space Force chose to organize. And deltas are one of the big, all the deltas are led by a colonel or a civilian equivalent in the acquisition community. Of a colonel. So definitely kind of cool. And for me personally, doing the switch, I went from about three direct reports, folks I supervise on a regular basis, to 11. And we are much flatter and leaner, and we can make decisions a lot faster. So that organizational structure is paying off already.
So it's pushed authority down to a lower level to allow faster decision making in the Space Force compared
that's
to the
exactly
other services.
Right.
Okay. I like that. Yeah. I like that.
And that's both operational on the operational side, but also empowering on the acquisition side, where we're making big acquisition decisions and running programs. That authority has been pushed down to a lower level. And you actually see this, John, at a great structure we went to when we reorganized a few years ago for our PEOs. So these are our program executive officers. So think very senior leaders, generals or civilian equivalent type generals. We used to have one that was responsible for all space systems. And we've pushed that authority down. So we have five of those generals or civilian equivalents. And we even have a colonel that is a PEO running their portfolios. And that pushing that acquisition decision making down to that lower level and empowering them is paying off in a big way.
So, Colonel Roth, we just have about 18 minutes left. I will remind for our audience, this is National Security This Week, and I'm your host, John Olson. Our guest today is Colonel Joseph Roth from the U.S. Space Force, and we're discussing U.S. Space Force's Space Systems Command. Let's talk about Space Systems Command, how you support the broad mission of protecting American national security interests. Functionally, what is it that Space Command does each day to protect America? Can you give it to us in a kind of a nutshell?
Yeah, so we do across every day, 24/7. We have operators in our op centers across the world, supporting our space systems, embedded with our allies and partners, embedded with the Army and the Navy, supporting the Joint Warfighter day in and day out. So Space Command's in the Space Force support our joint warfighters. We also have a huge effort when you have a service is to organize, train, and equip that service. So we're also doing the basic training we talked about earlier, higher level training, on-the-job training for our qualifications for that entire service to be effective. We are also working on the acquisition side across the board to develop capabilities that'll be important. Next generation systems that'll help protect us from our adversaries. So day in, day out, we have even though we're a relatively small force within the Space Force, our folks are embedded helping out command centers, providing space capabilities around the planet. And then, you can even see our Air Force Research Lab is pushing out along with many of the other space organizations such as NASA to get us back to the moon and cislunar space. So you can see this trend of protecting and providing systems around the world, but we are also pushing out and supporting NASA and the Artemis program to return to the moon, provide space domain awareness. COM capabilities, PNT, so that GPS and space capabilities for our satellites will be a really important one in the future. And it's pretty neat. So basically, we defend, provide a lot of assets to protect and defend the United States and our allies and partners.
So I will ask this because I'm a retired intelligence officer. And while I was on active duty, we declassified the fact that the National Reconnaissance Office exists. It was a top secret compartmented existence, and then all of a sudden it was unclassified like the next day. Very strange. But I have to think that as a DOD entity, the National Reconnaissance Office, that you guys probably work fairly closely with them on the bus, which is the satellite that goes up in space, and then you attach a bunch of stuff onto that bus to do a particular mission. Is that your command, Space Systems Command, that you're assigned to? Are you working with NRO on those kinds of platforms? I've read a bunch of different things where Space Force and NRO are trying to figure out what the relationship is going to be. Are you getting any clarity on that yet?
Yeah, well, we partner with the National Reconnaissance Office. So Space Systems Command in particular, we try and partner with it. I had the great opportunity of serving at the National Reconnaissance Office when I was a captain and a major. So I have direct firsthand knowledge of the capabilities that that organization provides, and they are amazing. And we've got a great organization. Now, the roles and missions are really where we come down to the differences. The NRO supports both the Department of Defense, but they also provide capabilities for the intel community. So the difference between Title 10 and Title 50, whereas the Space Force is solely focused on the joint warfighter and providing capabilities to support them. And so a little two different missions, but two very big actors in the national security space community. But there's many more that are active in space. And we have set up organizational structures to communicate with all those organizations to make sure we're developing systems and kind of dividing and conquering systems so that we eliminate duplication, but we also have the ability to get some great synergies with those mission partners. And, you know, that's at the basic level with science and technology and R&D, but all the way up to fielding operational systems. It works really well. And really, the stand up of the Space Force has made that coordination with all those other organizations that much easier and better.
And I do want to ask you about that. We have about 13 minutes left, so we have to be thoughtful on time because there's a bunch of questions I still want to ask you. Can you talk a little bit more about this concept of allied by design when it comes to how the U.S. Space Force partners with our allied nations?
Well, John, throughout history, we've never gone to war, just the United States. It's always been with our allies or our partners. And so we will expect the same thing will happen in space. We want to have our allies there side by side, defending, making sure that space remains a peaceful domain. But the problem's so large is we need to rely on our allies and our partners to protect our systems on orbit. I'll give you a few examples of what Space Systems Command is doing in those regards. But one of our biggest examples is we are hosting space domain awareness capabilities on the Chinese or the Japanese version of the GPS satellite. So they call it QZSS. And we are hosting a payload. The Japanese government has allowed us to put a payload on it to basically keep eyes on the geo belt, which is really important area that we want to monitor. And we're working with Japan and to provide that capability. And it'll be really important going through. And you mentioned that space domain awareness capability. That's all around the world. If we get our allies and partners providing information into a common database so we understand the threats and we can see them coming at us, that'll be really important. So definitely opportunities for allies and partners. Back to you, John.
Yeah, so partnering up with them and being tracking all that stuff that's up in space, being able to project that out through orbital mechanics and mathematics, you know exactly where all those pieces are going to be years in advance from a maneuver standpoint. You mentioned the term geo belt. Can you clarify very quickly for our listeners what you meant by that?
Yeah, so geosynchronous orbit, it's a really important orbit. It's essentially where a satellite is stationed. It has the same, it'll follow the same part of the Earth as the Earth rotates, and that satellite's orbit will track with the Earth, and you basically have a satellite. It looks almost like it's hovering over that location, but in reality, due to orbital mechanics, it's actually moving. The orbit is at the same turning rate as the Earth, and you can basically put a satellite that'll hover over it. If you're in LEO orbit, which is low Earth orbit, your satellites are flying a lot closer to the Earth, and they come over in passes. And different geographic areas will have a pass on every hour and a half, depending on how high your orbit is. But at the geosynchronous orbit, which is pretty far out there, it's basically hovering over that spot. Now, the really important thing for your listeners on geosynchronous orbit, it is very crowded.
Right.
And there are slots that you are assigned, and you park these, usually they're comm satellites or missile warning satellites, something that needs a big view of the Earth, and you park them out there. So if in the Navy terms, since you came from the Navy, those choke points, the Straits of Malacca, those things, the geo belt is definitely an area where we have a lot of satellites, both the United States, but a lot of countries have satellites. And it's an area we want to monitor, just like we would want to monitor the sea lanes on Earth.
And as I understand it, most of those in the geo belt, that's kind of plus or minus a couple of degrees above or below the equator. Is that right?
That's correct. Or you could have a higher inclination where it's actually doing a figure eight pattern.
Yeah. Yep.
So it can go a little bit higher or lower in the orbit. So pretty fascinating.
So you're on this trip right now. You're meeting with commercial partners. How important are these commercial partners when it comes to the U.S. Space Force? How much does DoD rely on commercial contracting agencies to help create, test, evaluate, and deliver high-end space capabilities? Can you talk a little bit more about that partnership? I'm giving you an opportunity to sing the praises of all your partners for the U.S. Space Force, the commercial partners right now.
Yeah, well, we couldn't do anything without our industry partners. So the satellite, the exquisite capabilities we build, the ground systems we deploy could not be done without the American industrial base. So having those scientists, engineers, program managers that are working hard in industry, whether they're for a large defense company or a small business that we're trying to invest in that's developing unique software, we couldn't do it without them. So, and really that's what we're trying to do with our Space Systems Command Front Door initiative. So is to make it easier for industry to work with the Space Force and Space Systems Command and kind of eliminate or streamline some of the bureaucracy. So it's really important. They provide us capabilities, but it's a whole type of government approach in that it's also academia as well. So our commercial partners, a lot of great ideas come out of our universities. They get started up in companies, and then we work with them to develop applications for military use, but there's a lot of commercial uses out there. So it's the whole system. And really, I think that's kind of the secret sauce of the United States is our economic advantage and our industrial base to help develop the systems that protect us.
So the first commercial partner that exists out there that figures out a way to clean up all the debris in space, those individuals that start that company are going to be billionaires very quickly, right?
It depends. I know they're looking at marketing models right now, but you know, General Raymond's quoted is space is hard. It is really hard. So having garbage trucks in space, you know, that a commercial industry may go after is a challenging problem. But we do have a lot of people going after that. And I know we have an organization called SpaceWorks. They just have the Orbital Prime Initiative, where they're trying to get companies to think about that problem and the greater on-orbit servicing, so refueling on orbit, and logistics, so providing support. So really, it's great to see the large investments in those areas, and it'll be pretty fascinating. But I think the big billions, I noticed you had Peter Gerritsen on your show a few months back, but asteroid mining,
right.
You know, he probably talked about and the resources in space, and you know, the first country to go after those resources usually sets the rules and the requirements, and you know, there is a race back to the moon, and there's water on the moon that could provide companies, if you figure out a way, provide rocket fuel for future development in space. So definitely it's almost like a race again.
Yep. Yeah, if we're going to travel back and forth to the moon or to Mars or anything else, we're going to need all those logistics hubs. Colonel Roth, we're closing in on the end. We've just got about less than 5 minutes left. I'm going to give you the floor. What else would you like to say about the Guardians who serve at Space Systems Command or more broadly in the U.S. Space Force?
Well, John, I think the Guardians are amazing. I've been in the service for 25 years. A year of that is in the Space Force. We just have an amazing team. And that team is both military members and our civilians. And we get a lot of strong support from the American public. So I know when I travel, I'm often the very first Guardian that somebody sees. I know at a rental car agency or at a restaurant, they will they've never met a Guardian before. So it's really you have an amazing team doing great things and really trying to advance our national security space agenda and protect the nation. And it's pretty great to see. And the I think we have opportunities in the future to shape the force and grow it the way we want it and develop people in a different manner. Our Guardians will be different than a Marine because their mission is different. And the things we value as a service will be a little different, and we're at a point where we're small enough that we can make changes pretty quickly and go after new concepts and capabilities. I know we're exploring right now even something as simple as your physical training tests, so your PT tests. We're actually exploring using rings. So these rings that monitor your health and take it to a new level is we not, you know, measure your health all year long to make sure you're being healthy and healthy habits and not using a specific test to test you out. So we'll still do PT. We'll still have the tests, but it's a whole concept for the Guardian. So pretty amazing to see. And we've got that flexibility. So America can rest assured we got the right people in place protecting the nation.
Sounds to me like you guys have a really strong entrepreneurial spirit, so don't lose that. That's one of the biggest problems with the major services in DOD is there's this incredible bureaucracy that slows down our ability to really respond to the warfighters' needs, and it sounds like you guys are doing everything you can to avoid that bureaucracy. Unfortunately,
well, John,
if
we're not careful, we will get out innovated by China.
That's right.
So we need to streamline that bureaucracy, invest in those technologies and those capabilities, and otherwise, we will have a very different situation here not too long from now. And that's why we were created. And hopefully the culture of the Space Force doesn't change, and we keep that entrepreneurial or innovative spirit.
What kind of resources would you like to recommend to our listeners to tap into to learn more about the Space Force?
I would say there's a variety of publications that are out there that you can hear different news about the Space Force. I know my father does a great job. He sends me some news articles from a variety of publications, but the ones we kind of get is Space News. Doing searches. I know we push a lot of information from Space Systems Command. The Space Force in general tries to provide a lot of public release information. So do some searches on our websites. We try and post a lot of information there. I would say stay tuned to defense publications that come out. We have a new organization supporting the Space Force called the Space Force Association. And they're like the Air Force Association, but they're stood up to help educate folks on what's going on. So yeah, definitely stay tuned. And the Air and Space, a lot of publications out there, and there's a lot of neat things going on. So, and it's hard to keep up across the range of things, especially within the commercial market, a lot of things being done, rockets. I know when I was stationed down at Patrick Air Force Base down near Cape Canaveral, we were launching about one rocket per week, and the pace was accelerating, and really a huge investment in our space infrastructure, both the commercial markets and the military market.
Unfortunately, we've come to the end of today's edition of National Security This Week. Colonel Joseph Roth from the U.S. Space Force's Space Systems Command, thank you so much for joining us today.
Awesome. Thanks, John. I really appreciate it. And thanks for doing this show. It's really important that you communicate national security topics with your audience and listeners. Really excited to be a part of the Space Force. And thanks for inviting us. And then one more thing. Yep. Thank you for your service to the country. And you're still doing it today.
Thank you very much. That closes this week's edition of National Security This Week. I'm your host, John Olson. Thank you for joining us today. I look forward to sharing time with you again next Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. Thank you for listening to National Security This Week. Have a great finish to your week, everyone. Take care.
You've been listening to National Security This Week, a weekly show looking into issues of American national security with the host, John Olson. Listen every Wednesday at 9 a.m. for National Security This Week.